Today I'm talking to Paul Zaremka, professor of economics at the University of Buffalo. He has published widely on a range of economics issues and is the editor of the annual series Research in Political Economy, including Volume 23, which was published in 2006 and entitled The Hidden History of 9/11-2001. Professor Zaremka, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
You're most welcome. I'm happy to be here.
All right. Professor, please tell the listeners about your background and your areas of academic interest.
Yeah, I graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in econometrics. I mean, that was kind of my specialty, which is a combination of statistical theory with economic theory. And so I've used numbers quite a bit in my career. I spent some time at the University of California at Berkeley before coming to the State University of New York at Buffalo, where I've been basically the last 35 years. Over that time, I have progressed and just become interested in Marxist theory, and I have worked in that area. And the journal I edit, the Research in Political Economy, has been going on for about 30 years. That's my background.
Okay. Well, let's get directly into it. In 2006, as I mentioned, you edited the 23rd volume of Research in Political Economy, which was The Hidden History of 9/11-2001. Tell us about the impetus for this volume and what it contains.
Okay, let me say that when 9/11-2001 happened, I just basically watched, obviously everybody had strong reactions, but I didn't try and identify who did it. I was just absorbing the event itself. But within the next 4 to 5 months, I began to say, there's more behind this thing than might meet the eye. And I went to a lecture in the University of Toronto, which is only 2 hours away from Buffalo, and was exposed to the fact that there might be something very seriously wrong with the standard interpretation, the official interpretation of 9/11. So basically for the next several years, I was looking at the website articles and studies about what 9/11 was all about. And that led me after a while to a group of scholars, most of whom I guess are professors of one sort or another, who were emailing each other. I don't really remember how that list got started, but it had maybe about 40 to 50 people. Somebody at some point said we should write a book about 9/11, and one thing led to another. The end result was that I could offer Research in Political Economy, issue the number 23, as the outlet, so everybody knew that when they were writing that they would have an outlet. That's really important. I mean, that you're not just writing for something that might get thrown in the trash can. You can actually expect it to get published. And we went through a peer review process, I mean, which means that we made sure that everybody's articles were examined by other people who knew what they were talking about. And so we tried to get the book as the highest possible standards, and I think we accomplished that. I mean, I'm pleased with every single chapter. Although the chapters cover many different topics connected with 9/11. And that came out in 2006 in hardback with the Dutch publisher Elsevier, which is one of the biggest academic publishers in the world, actually. And subsequently, we've gotten a soft cover edition that came out by Seven Stories Press, which is an American publisher, independent publisher, and it's much cheaper. Instead of being $100, it's like $20.
Excellent. Well, who were some of the other professors involved with that project?
Well, there's a whole list. The most famous one probably is David Ray Griffin, who has done more research about 9/11 than anybody else. He's probably published about five books now on 9/11. He's actually was a professor of theology until he retired. But we have a bunch of others. For example, there's a Native American scholar named Four Arrows, who's otherwise known as Don Jacobs, who's out in California now. We have another one from Britain and another one from University of Western Ontario. Another one from University of Carleton University in Ottawa. And finally another one, well, two more, one from Philadelphia, and finally, there's two others who actually are not in the academic world, but have either been in the academic world or connected with research that connects with 9/11. I mean, I could describe each one of them, but perhaps not.
All right, well, let's get into today's discussion. Today, I'd like to talk about your own contribution to the collection, an essay entitled Initiation of the 9/11 Operation with Evidence of Insider Trading. Now, I wanted to focus on the latter part of that essay, dealing with the question of the evidence of insider trading on 9/11. But first, it might be useful to define some of the terms employed in your discussion for the non-specialists in the audience. I'm sure many people have heard about the spike in put options on United and American Airlines in the week leading up to the attack. So, putting aside the specificity of the 9/11 attacks for a moment, can you define a put option and talk about the significance of a spike in put option activity before a large event?
Okay, a put option, and there's something in the opposite called a call option, but we're only going to talk about a put option now. And I'm going to try and describe it kind of simply. I mean, if you have the feeling that a specific stock is going to fall in price, let's say within the next 30 days or the next 90 days or even in the next year, you're almost certain of it, okay? Then you might want to make the following bet. And that is to buy something called a put option, which means that you will have the right to sell that stock in the future at a price that's negotiated today, even if the price in the future were much lower than it is today. And at the same time, you could, if you sold the stock at that higher price in the future, you could actually buy the stock right before that. So you buy the stock and then you sell it under the put option at this higher price and you make a lot of money. I mean, that's what your intention is in doing a put option. Put options have what they call a strike price, which is the price that you're negotiating that you have the option to sell the stock for in the future. That's the strike price, and it also has an expiration date. It tells you how many days you're allowed to wait out the fluctuations in the stock price in the meantime.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics of 9/11. Firstly, what is the official position on the 9/11 insider trading as put forward by the 9/11 Commission?
Well, they actually gave it very scant attention. Maybe before I give you the official position, let me give you the news report that came out right after 9/11, because I think that's actually more important than what the 9/11 Commission did. Right after 9/11, people who know the stock markets and option markets and know where to get the data, and this data is to some extent publicly available. I mean, I'd have to clarify that if it's necessary. Found out that there was a lot of put option trading on many of the companies that were negatively impacted by 9/11, including obviously the two airlines that had planes that were going into the skies that day, namely American Airlines and United Airlines. Let me repeat, there was many companies, but specifically American Airlines and United Airlines, that had a lot of put option trading going on in the few days before 9/11, and people got very suspicious that if you followed the money, you would find out who done it, who engaged in the 9/11 operation. I think what actually happened is that the people who were doing that assumed that it was definitely Osama bin Laden and his people, that they were making a killing because they knew it was going to happen ahead of time because they were doing the operation. So they wanted to show the enormous increase in put option trading on American Airlines and United Airlines and some other companies that occurred before 9/11, get the names of the people who did it, and then you have the proof that 9/11 was done by, for example, Osama bin Laden. That went on, that discussion went on. I mean, they didn't actually say who did it. They just said that there's an enormous increase in put option volume in that period of time, and they were calling for an investigation. Suddenly, that whole discussion just dropped out of the sky, and it wasn't talked about anymore, which suggested somebody said to somebody that the answer that you're going to get very happy to you. It's not going to lead to where you think it's going to lead to, so you better shut up about it. I mean, I'm sort of being colloquial about it, but that's basically what I think happened. But on the other hand, since it had been in some of the major financial press, including Barron's, for example, The 9/11 Commission, when it reported, knew that it couldn't just forget about the issue. So they had one sentence and then one long footnote in the report, which basically dismissed the whole investigation about the put option, which would be connected to something called insider trading. In other words, you know that an event is going to happen that gives you inside knowledge. You take advantage of that knowledge by engaging in put option trading in this case.
All right. Well, in your article, you detail some of the evidence that, in fact, this insider trading did take place. Tell us about some of the sources of information you cite in that article.
Well, that gets into a kind of complicated discussion, because, to tell you the truth, some of the reports were exaggerated in the beginning, by which I mean to say that they were reports of like a 90 times increase in put option volumes, or 900 times increase in put option trading volume that occurred. And some people were quoting other people who were reporting these numbers, but then other people were reporting different numbers. So a lot of my work actually was sort of nailing down what the truth of the matter was. And there is something called Option Metrics. It's a company that provides data on options trading in any stocks every day of the year, including every trade day of the year, including strike prices and when there's expiration for these put options. So I had to get all that data and look and see what was happening, particularly in American Airlines and United Airlines. And the result I found out, at least one result, was that some of the people were reporting the data correctly and some were making, what looks like, the mistake of doubling the number of option trading by basically looking at a buy and a sell as two trades when actually it's one trade. In other words, if you count it as somebody buys from somebody else, okay, then it looks like there's two people involved, and you count that as two trades when it's actually should be counted as one trade. Option Metrics, when it reports its data, reports it correctly. I mean, it basically divides by two when it does that. Now, having said that, okay, because that itself took pretty much work. Having said that, nevertheless, there's still a huge amount of put option trading going on in 9/11 before in American Airlines and United Airlines. So to tell you the kinds of profits that could be made, and both American Airlines and United Airlines were trading at about $30 a share before 9/11, and the week after 9/11 they were trading at about 18. In other words, they dropped from 30 to about 18. So, or, you know, that order of magnitude. So the end result is you could make something like a $12 profit on every single one of those trades you engage in, minus whatever the costs were of the options themselves, which probably were in the order of 50 cents, something like that. And that was it's quite a profitable operation if you know it, because you knew ahead of time that it was going to happen. You knew ahead of time that 9/11 was going to happen, and it was going to impact negatively American Airlines and United Airlines. You can make a lot of money.
So some sources have said that people have made in the neighborhood of tens of millions of dollars from such trading. Other sources claim it could be in the billions. What is your take on the range of likely profits derived from these trades?
Well, that's hard to say. First of all, there's a lot more companies involved than those two companies. You have to look at the insurance companies that were negatively impacted on 9/11, construction companies that might have been negatively impacted, hotel companies that might have been negatively impacted. There's a group of two professors now in Zurich who are investigating these other companies. Furthermore, some people say that there was a lot of activity in the precious metals markets, and even in treasury bonds and treasury bills. My own sense is that maybe in the order of hundreds of millions were made overall, but not billions. I can't prove that, but my sense is, by looking at these two stocks and then looking at the other stocks some of which maybe didn't even have insider trading that we could really identify. I don't think the end result would be more than, say, $250 million.
I see. Professor Zarebka, how is former CIA Executive Director Buzzy Krongard potentially implicated in this story?
He's implicated because he was a senior bank officer for Deutsche Bank, which then was sold, became another bank, which name slipped my mind right at the moment, so I can look it up. But then he became the third ranking officer in the CIA. So, if you wanted to investigate any one person who might know something about insider trading, that would be the very first guy I would go to. In other words, I would subpoena him for information. That's something, obviously, that the 9/11 Commission didn't even hint at the possibility that they did that. But if it was generally an independent commission, they should have done that. Because the trades went through Deutsche Bank. We know that. And the trades did go through Deutsche Bank. There's a lot of them, and he was previously at that bank, so you would check them out.
All right. Well, earlier we were talking about the idea that hundreds of millions could have been made potentially on these types of trades, but of course we know that billions were in fact made from the insurance on the lease that Larry Silverstein had on World Trade Center 1 and 2. Could you talk about that lease and how the money was derived from the destruction of that property?
I don't know that one too well. I mean, but basically the idea is that Silverstein buys, he already had World Trade Center 7. He buys the rest of the World Trade Center something like 6 weeks before 9/11 itself. And he finalized the transaction. And part of that transaction was to include insurance for any possible destruction of the buildings, including the possibility that it would be destroyed by some terrorist attack. When the buildings were then destroyed, he no longer had to pay any of the lease payments for the ownership of the buildings, but at the same time, it got, well, he first claimed, I mean, there was a big lawsuit over it, but he claimed lots of billions, many billions of dollars compensation for the loss of, quote, that property. So it turned out to be a very financially profitable, it's usually financially profitable transaction, far more than the put option trades, what I think was probably at stake.
So it would be safe to say that there are people with both the motive and the means for aiding in the attacks who have never been properly investigated by the 9/11 Commission.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, there's the old thing about follow the money, okay? And what we have not been doing about 9/11 is following the money. Who profited from it? Who profited from the destruction, and who is profiting from the reconstruction?
Absolutely. Well, as a note of interest, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Robert Baer, but he was a celebrated CIA case officer. In fact, the movie Syriana was based on a fictionalization of some of his actual work for the agency. And an interesting story came out last week when the grassroots citizen journalist group We Are Change Los Angeles was talking to him about 9/11 outside of an event. And you can watch the video of this on YouTube. And this CIA field agent said, quote, "I know the guy that went into his broker in San Diego and said, 'Cash me out, it's going down tomorrow.'" And then he went on to add that this man's brother worked in the White House, which is a pretty startling admission from an otherwise pretty conservative and tight-lipped man. Did you catch that story?
No, I didn't. Actually, I didn't know about that.
Okay, well,
I had another story, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't verified this myself, but I guess I just say what I've heard, and then you can check it out yourself. Al Franklin is running for senator in Minnesota. He's pretty much even with Coleman, and he wrote a book. And in that book, he says he got a call from Ed Koch telling him not to go to work on the 23rd day of Elul. The 23rd day of Elul is the Hebrew day of 9/11. And that's, he had an office in the 9/11 towers on that day. So, and let me say again, Koch, former mayor of New York City, is calling Al Franklin not to go to work on 9/11.
I'm sorry, what was the source of that again?
It was, it's Al Franklin's book. It's in the book itself. Actually, I don't know the name of the book right in front of me, but a book that he recently published.
Very interesting. All right, well, Professor Zaremka, is there anything else that you feel we need to touch on in a discussion of the 9/11 money trail?
Yes, we need to go the next step, because I just, when I say I threw out numbers, and numbers were thrown out, that there was a lot of insider trading in put options before 9/11, that's not a very serious, I mean, from an academic point of view, that's not a very serious comment, because you can always have extreme events that occur for random reasons. I mean, speaking as a statistician, you can always have something that looks highly unusual, but it's actually nothing but something that happened with very low probability, but nevertheless has no underlying nefarious cause in a case like this. So, we have a Professor Potosman at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, who actually has access to data that the public doesn't have access to, namely insider trading and put options for American Airlines and United Airlines, including not the people who did the trade, but the actual amount of each trade for every day before 9/11. And let me explain that it's better data than I can get access to, because it's data which makes a distinction between the buy and the sell of a put option. We should be talking about people who are buying put options, but the data that you get that are publicly available data don't distinguish between a buy and a sell of a put option. So he was able to get that. He got that from the Chicago Board of Trade. And I think that they gave it to him because they actually wanted to figure out whether they could identify insider trading in general for stocks by some statistical method. And I mean, I don't really know this for sure, but they provided him confidential data, which he can't provide to anybody else, to allow him to do serious statistical analysis. And he found out, and he published it in the Journal of Business, you know, of all places. I mean, a very serious academic journal. Nobody can question the reliability of that particular journal. They accepted his article for publication, presumably after review, which says that there is a 1% probability of one of the planes, 99% probability that one of the planes definitely had insider trading involved, and the other one is a little bit less, but the combined probability would be more than 99% that there was insider trading on the stocks of American Airlines and United Airlines before 9/11. In other words, that's a very high probability that something is really wrong about that day, that it was not a random event.
So just to restate that, basically you're saying that there was a peer-reviewed journal essay detailing the actual statistical evidence based on a deep analysis of sources that, in fact, insider trading did, in fact, take place.
Right. Now, actually, the thing was published actually in print after the 9/11 commission was reported, but it was known quite a bit ahead of time. I mean, I knew about it ahead of time before it was published. The 9/11 commission could have done the same analysis themselves, or a similar analysis, or whatever. I mean, you know, they had the capability of at least checking out what this guy was finding out, Professor Potosman, and they don't even make any reference to him at all. I can talk a little bit about what the 9/11 Commission report actually says about insider trading. I mean, they only had one paragraph, but I can mention it.
Please do.
Yeah. They said that there was, in one of the two stocks, they said, I'm not sure if it was United Airlines or American Airlines, it doesn't really matter from my discussion. In one of those two, there was most of the trading in put options that was undertaken as a result of one trade by one company that was doing something very unusual to protect itself, okay? But Potosman's work basically says that with a 99% probability that they don't do that kind of thing. In other words, the explanation is inconsistent with insider trading that generally happens on stocks throughout the system, if you want to put it that way. And in the other case, they claim that there was a faxed bulletin from some kind of stock person putting out news items suggesting people what to do in the stock market, suggesting that they put options on this particular company, and the stock was going to go down. And they claimed that, that particular bulletin is responsible for a lot of the trades, but they didn't say that they went to subscribers of that bulletin to find out if they actually engaged in the trades. They didn't even tell you what publication it was that made that recommendation, because it would be nothing wrong with them making, having said it. And furthermore, there's so many different bulletins, so many different factors going out every day of the week from these financial advisors suggesting you do this or you do that. It doesn't mean that people are going to follow those recommendations. And even if they did follow recommendations, sometimes that would have been included in the kinds of academic studies that Portisman engaged in. So it was a totally ridiculous, basically, explanation, a whitewash of a serious evidence that there was insider trading before 9/11.
So in an ideal world, if there was an adequate and true investigation of these claims, what do you think needs to be done or investigated specifically in order to come to the final truth of the matter?
The most obvious thing would be to find out actually the names of the people engaged in the operations. There's been several reports from people who are in the highest levels of these market transactions, who are in charge of these market transactions, that said that it's no problem at all identifying who made these transactions, even if they're offshore transactions. There's even somebody in Bermuda is doing it through some kind of account in Bermuda, going through somebody in Chicago trying to get to New York, or in New York trying to get to Chicago, or down in Miami, or whatever else. You can easily identify who's actually making those trades. But there was no discussion of who actually engaged in the trades, and that needs to be done. That needs to be done. You need to find out exactly who was doing what on those few days before 9/11 with regard to many stocks, but most specifically American Airlines and United Airlines stocks.
All right, Professor Zaremka, how can people find out more about your work and about the hidden history of 9/11-2001?
Well, if I don't want to be pure and modest, this book I edited, Hidden History of 9/11, it covers the waterfront pretty much. It's a serious study. You can't take it as light reading in the evening, but it does cover not only what happened on 9/11, but some of the background, for example, Islamophobia, whether there's something called Machiavellian state terrorism in general, independently of what country you happen to live in, also, what the connection is between Western intelligence agencies has been with something called Al-Qaeda, whether Al-Qaeda really exists as a separate entity from Western intelligence agencies. Those are the kinds of things that are in the background. And then we have four chapters on 9/11 itself. And it's not expensive. It's kind of like if you want one book on 9/11, that'll do the job for you. The one thing it doesn't do is just doesn't discuss the media. How the media has covered 9/11. It doesn't cover sort of the propaganda game that's been going on all these years.
And do you have a website you'd like to throw out to the listeners?
It's a little bit complicated, I think. Maybe the easiest way to say it is just to go to Amazon.com and look and just write in my name, my last name, Zaremka. Look for a book by Zaremka, Zaremka, and you'll come up with The Hidden History of 9/11. Get it in paperback because it's much cheaper. It's only around $13 on Amazon.com at this point.
All right, excellent. Well, Professor Zaremka, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
You're most welcome. I enjoyed the conversation.